at the wrong time.
Blanton of the capacity to say the wrong thing at the wrong time?
Yeah. After the primary, he won the primary against Blake, almost no opposition. And there were a couple of people. I'm telling Don Palmer up in East Tennessee was running against him. Got about 7 or 8% of the vote. But in the last days of the campaign, Palmer was over this way and campaigned, and we gave him some coverage, you know, and he was talking to the issues, and, saying that Ray was not a national member. So when Blanton came in that election night, came into the sitter room, I said, "Well, you want an overwhelming victory?" And he said, "Yes, no thanks to your paper." Couldn't figure out what the hell he was talking about. I mean, I didn't know. We'd almost been outside that campaign. And later I talked to one of the political reporters. Said, you know, he's pretty bitter about a couple of stories that appeared in which Palmer attacked him. He did the same thing the other night when he won. He came in and came in just as the first edition rolled. And there was a picture on page one of the first edition, his picture, under it, an H line, an italic line, which said something like, "Less than spectacular." Apparently somebody gave him one just as he came in the building. And when he got back there, he started that same shit. "Well, you all don't think it's spectacular, you know?" I couldn't care what he says, but it's hardly designed to win things.
What do you think would have happened in a runoff, if there'd been a runoff between him and Butcher?
I think Butcher would be. I think almost any one of the top five candidates would be. I think Crockett Wiseman or Haney could have beaten him too. And maybe even Snodgrass. I think he went in with 25% of the vote. Never really gained anything.
Why do you think Dunn vetoed that runoff bill?
I think that just obvious he didn't want to. He didn't want to have a majority candidate run against him. You know, another 3 week campaign by the Democrats could have been somewhat unifying. It could have, particularly if the loser was generous to the winner. Baker has got a pretty good handle on this party, I think, on the Republican Party. There is bad blood between Baker and Brock. There's no denying that. You don't have to scratch very deep. Just talk to Winfield's press secretary. And there is bad blood between them. The split in the Republican Party is there. If Winston had won, I wouldn't have any doubt that Clinton would beat him. I think the defections on Baker's part, among Baker's people, they were swept, swept over into the Democratic to the Democratic Party, or stayed home. They really dislike him. And if you go around here and talk to the committed Baker people, you know they're sad. Deep-seated split in that party.
But don't they share offices in many of the cities in the state?
Yeah. What's the split?
But it's papered over. I mean, Bill Handy here, for example, is a Baker man. Brock's got some girl up there. In Chattanooga, I think they share an office over there. Brock has that. I don't think Baker even bothers to put anybody in over there.
What's the basis of the split?
just my own judgment of it. It's hard for me to talk to the Republicans and fathom, really, that it's ideological, and still they will tell you that it's ideological. The Baker Republicans in Nashville will tell you that there is a very sharp ideological split between Howard Baker and Bill Brock that has to do with moderation and conservatism. I can't.
It's ideological kind of thing.
They say, yeah, they say that it is. Yeah, I mean, I can't find it. I don't find it in their voting records. You know, sure, Bill's a little more conservative, but he actually talks a little more liberal. I think more than anything else, it's just a sharp personality split. And I suspect, and it's just a suspicion, that it relates in most ways to Brock's closeness to Nixon. I think Alexander and the White House were totally alienated. I don't need to tell you this. But I can remember having a couple of conversations with Ralph Griffith when he was Baker's press secretary, and one with Alexander. And it was pretty obvious, you know, he just felt he was wasting his time in the White House. He was anxious to get out of there. Again, the Baker people used to say, the two closest people to Richard Nixon are John Conley and Bill Brock. I mean, they told people on Baker's staff have said that. People on Dunn's staff have said that. If you can get Ralph Griffith in an informal atmosphere, get rid of his head out, and he'll come with that. There are a few other Republicans who will. The Brock people won't anymore. There was a time when they were snide and snotty about Howard. But you don't get that anymore. But you do get it from Baker people. Sam Bartholomew, who's a banker and a lawyer here, young guy, managed Howard's campaign. Mark Clark Bates, almost open in his hostility for Brock. Ralph Griffith and Dunn's press secretary. Careful, cute, cautious, but it's there. It's there, and at least I sense it's there. You know, maybe you would not find it as obvious as I do, but in my own mind, I'm convinced that the split's there.
Is a split, though, only between the followers of the two, or is there a division between the two men themselves?
Well, I just don't know. I don't have any way to know. I do know that Baker followers considered Winston's candidacy an extension of Bill Brock's influence. They considered it a threat within the framework of the Republican Party. Now, I don't have that much contact on the other side.
The impression we got in Chattanooga is a lot of the Brock people were lukewarm about Winston, or became lukewarm. They supported him and voted for him, but they got turned off by him as a candidate.
Yeah, because we talked to them after the fact.
True.
They said that the reason Alexander won because he ran a beautiful campaign, the kind of thing that they admire, organizationally and media. Mm-hmm. It's way out ahead of Winston. But, you know, I wonder, Jack, if that is in 2020 hindsight.
I'll just tell you what I'd like for you to do. I'd like for you to take the time to get somebody to show you both their television. I'll tell you that Winston had a super slick television campaign. I mean, it was really good. It was so good, it was Madison Avenue plus 5. I mean, he had some spots that seen. Beyond that, Bill Goodwin, who was Brock's media man, when was he?
You mean Bob Goodwin?
I think it's Bill, isn't it?
From Maryland?
No, this fellow's from here.
But you think the Winston media campaign was better than Alexander?
I think it was equal to it. I think it was equal to it.
But where do you see that schism or that rift coming or going down the road? What's going to happen as a result of it?
Well, I would anticipate that Winfield Dunn may take Brock on.
What would happen?
Would he, if he took Brock on, would he do it without at least support from Baker people or Baker himself?
Yeah, that was what I was going to say about the first point. Those people said that was true. Brock put out a memo. I don't have the time in my mind. But as it became apparent that there was going to be a bloodletting, it dawned on Bill Brock that he was next up. And he couldn't afford to have a divided Democratic Party. And he put in writing a memo telling his people. I don't even know who his people are, but telling his people to keep their noses out of the governor's race.
Wasn't that after a whole lot of them had already gotten involved?
Yeah, it was just as a lot of them were getting involved. That's right.
That support should be heard.
Hmm?
I said that sort of support that we heard, Brock didn't really turn the organization on for Winston.
No, he didn't. He was scared to death. He told them not to get close. And that memo is in writing. I think we probably had a news story on it at the time. I think they went down the line for him. Insofar as they could, that district did go for Winston. Maybe the only one that did, I don't remember. But it did. Brock is a...
Winston has some connections over there, didn't he live there?
He did, yeah. He did, he started that hospital over there.
But do you think Dunn would run against Brock without Baker's tacit approval?
Oh, I think he... You know, I think they're... This is not anything anybody's told me. But if they think he can beat him, they'll run him. And I mean Howard. I'm convinced that it goes right to the top. I'm convinced that Howard Baker... considered and does consider Bill Brock personally a threat within the National Republican Party and within the Republican Party of Tennessee. Nobody tells me that. Maybe I'm, as a Democrat, I'm reading into it, something I want to see. But
would Baker not also perceive, though, that a Dunn-Brock fight could result in a real split in the Republican Party and end up hurting him later?
Hurting Howard later.
Yeah.
Unless he was, yeah. And he's not that way, you know. He's very cute and careful about what he does. An interesting, there was a meeting in Memphis Baker ran in, when?
72.
Yeah, Baker ran in 72. There was a meeting in Memphis sometime in 71. In 70. In 70. Kirkendall got up with Baker and Brock on the platform. pledged his unqualified support to Kuykendall, to Bacon, in 72. In the primary, against any comer. He said, he's earned it, and I'm going to be for him, and I'll manage his campaign if he wants me to, if I don't have opposition here. And I'm asking every other Republican incumbent on this stage to join me. And there was an ovation. Now, Baker told me this, so I know what happened. And Brock was, in effect, by virtue of that meeting, barred from taking any step that would give Howard any primary opposition last time. I don't remember what that meeting was about, but it was something. I think it was during '70 campaign, but it could have been. It could have been after that. But I think it was in '70, and that it was a rally for Brock in Memphis.
It was my impression that when you talked to the Brock people, particularly those who really were involved in this early, they viewed the Republican Party as their party.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Is that impression correct?
They do, yeah.
They were the ones that put it together in 1962, and Brock was the man who put together organizationally, the first man to win and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's right. They do. And you see, they got the money on their side. Pat Wilson, who really is for George Bush for vice president. Pat Wilson is treasurer of the Republican National Committee. He's son-in-law of Justin Potter, the late Justin Potter, who is the most conservative businessman in all the history of Tennessee, anti-TVA, anti-every goddamn thing. But his son-in-law, David K. Wilson, Cherokee Industries, Insurance, Investments, he is the National Republican Chairman, and he is a Brock Republican. And he is the money in the state.
Well, in a sense, isn't the Baker wing or the Dunn wing sort of out of step with what's happening all over the South in the Republican Party?
Yeah.
I mean, they...
Way out.
Maybe they're a little bit, like the Holzhauser wing, Jack. But essentially, they're out of step with what's going on in the other Southern states.
Except they're winning.
Except what?
Except they're winning.
They won here.
Yeah. I don't know how they are from Virginia, say.
Oh, God, Virginia. Virginia's way off. I mean, Linwood Holton lost out in Virginia.
Oh, has he? Well, that's what I was thinking of.
You have the same basic split in North Carolina between Holzhauser and another faction.
Yeah.
That had the party all those years, or what there was of it.
Right. Yeah, well, I think the traditional Republican Party, it's always been fractionalized, but the old guard Republicans, the old Taft Republicans in Tennessee, are the Brock Republicans.
But is it true that Baker came along as sort of being the right man at the right time, from the right place, and he happened to come along on that second time around, just when the Brock people really put together a statewide Republican organization?
And then they had
an attractive candidate.
No, that's not what elected him.
What did?
What elected him was really the old line fight in the Democratic Party. Frank Clement, was elected in 1952 and really he was 32 years old. This paper fought him, but he was pretty damn good governor. But the coalition with Ellington took him down. Ellington was elected governor with 31% of the vote in the Democratic primary in 1962. That'd be right. Yeah. Ellington was elected with 31% of the vote in a four-way race. So Blanton's Clanton's victory is not that out of step fast. Then that was the 60s. Then in 66, Clement was elected with 40% in the freeway race. Which is by way of saying there are a hell of a lot of people against Buford Ellington and Frank Clement. Okay. Bass runs in 64. Somehow I've got it backwards.
Did Bass run against Clement in 66?
In 60.
No, he ran in 64.
He ran
Baker.
First.
That's right. Then
see,
he ran
Bass in. Beats him
right.
In 64. The Republicans came over in 66. In 66, Baker is running against a guy named Ken Roberts. That's Pat. Ken Roberts was Pat Wilson's candidate. But the Republicans left that primary in droves and came into the Democratic primary and elected Clement over Bass in the 66 primary and elected Ellington over Hooker in the 66 primary. And you can look at the first two districts, first three districts, and see that the figures bear that out. When the anti-Clement Democrats got a chance to get back at Frank in November, they either stayed home or went for Howard. And that split is really what got. Well, that's really, I think that's what elected Howard over Frank Clement. Bass didn't work very hard for Frank. Nobody did. Ellington himself did. Ellington and Clement despised each other by that time. I think the Democrats elected Howard Baker. Now, the Brock people do tell it quite differently. I mean, they do say, you know, it's our, they do, as you all say, they say it's our party, we put it together. But Ken Roberts was financed almost out of pocket by Pat Wilson. That was in 64, wasn't it? No, that was in
66.
I think that's right. Whatever it was that Roberts ran against Baker. Yeah, I think that was 66. That's right. And Baker won that primary hands down, you know, it was not even a race. He was the nearest thing to a Brock candidacy. But Howard was a natural heir to a large segment of old-line Republican support. I mean, his father and mother, you know, had both held that congressional seat in the 2nd District. And, you know, he was as entitled to be the heir as, more entitled, I think, than Bill Brock. His father was,
but isn't it,
after Carol Reese, his father was Mr. Republican.
But isn't it also a fact, though, that Brock had put together a real organization in that 3rd District,
yeah,
and then his people,
and
then his people had worked for 2 years expanding that organization statewide with Brock's own candidacy in mind, and he didn't run.
I'm not sure. sure of that. I do know that they were working.
That's what they told us. They were working on him for governor or senator in 66.
Well, there may be there may have been a few of them who were doing that, but. I mean, what sort of opposition did he have? Franklin, hey, he ran against him and he beat the hell out of Franklin, who had at that time no money, no wife with money. And as he tells it, the reputation for being a queer, which he's not. They worked him over on that terribly in that campaign. First time he beat Wilkes Thrasher. That would have been in 62, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Thrasher had gone down the line for Kennedy in 60, and so that hurt him. There's no doubt, though, that that Brock did establish a very strong third district base, but that's something quite different from a statewide organization. I don't think the Republicans had a statewide organization until Winfield Dunn came into the picture. They brought Memphis in, they brought a West Tennessee voter.
The way the Brock people tell it, they built the statewide organization, and then Dunn in 70 just kind of tagged on. He piggybacked out of the Brock 1970 Senate organization.
And it's my judgment that had it not been for Winfield Dunn, Bill Brock would have gone to the Senate. And he couldn't have carried Shelby County against Alvin Gore, I don't believe. I believe Alvin Gore would have carried Memphis. Speculation, but there's no way to tell, but for sure. But he'd never lost Memphis before Albert. Hooker had carried Memphis against Ellington. Again, that was Democratic primary, but Republicans voted in 66. Hooker carried it by 1,000 votes. What's the evidence that they had built it? They had built a Republican base in Memphis. I don't think they can show that. They may have done it. Maybe something I'm not aware of.
They say it was all organization.
Hmm?
They say it was all organization. Precinct captains and all that sort of thing.
Hmm. Well, I think it's been a swing district. What it really says to me, though, as opposed to whether that's a fact or not a fact, it does indicate to me that there is more evidence than what I know about as to the split between the Brock and Baker people. There are basic ingrown jealousies that exist. They probably know what's coming too. They probably know when it feels like it.
But do you think Dunn would run against Brock without Baker's tacit support?
No, he won't run without Baker's support. Baker.
You think Baker could block Dunn from running against Brock?
Yeah.
It boiled down to that.
Yeah, I don't have any doubt of that. None would have. None would have. I don't have any doubt. I think that Winfield Dunn. I think Winfield Dunn's really sort of a creature. So far. I think Winfield's really sort of a creature. So far. I'm sorry, Howard. I think if you look at the people who are close to him, that comes out of him. And it seems to me too that the power, that the real power of this Baker's power in the Republican Party, it seems to me, came to the surface in this last election. I mean, Oldham is more a Howard Baker man than a Bill Brock man. You know, you had two candidates pulling from the Baker side of the party, and they still, and Alexander still manages to win. I was betting on Winston until the last day. It was just Democrats' wish, and because I was talking, the hostility was more deep-seated on the Baker side than it is on the Brock side. But I had a very definite impression that because Oldham was in there and was pulling off of...
He's going here.
And was pulling off of Alexander, and I feel that he did. That Winston would be able to win. I suspect Bill Brock's very unhappy. But if I were in his shoes, I wouldn't be happy about it. If Dunn runs against them, they'll tear the Republican Party up. They'll have their...
Wouldn't that be the primary reason for Baker trying to prevent that from happening?
Yeah, I agree. Might be. Well, might be. He'll have to weigh whether Brock is more a threat out than whether that sort of split United Party is a danger to him. Now, I guess that'll be a value judgment that he'll have to make when the time comes. But if he is closer to Gerald Ford than Bill Brock is, I mean, in my own head, I know that relationship between Brock and Nixon played a major part in building this whole conflict. I don't even see Crystal. I think so.
If Nixon removed and Brock being no longer a threat insofar as access to the White House and White House favors.
That could resolve it, you see. That could resolve it. He could go back and be in the junior senator and Howard would get the court to which he thinks he's entitled. But Brock never, I mean, again, I get this periodically from Baker people, but Brock would, and they would say, did you hear Brock last night? On TV. No, I didn't hear. My God, he's been over the White House again. Hell, Nixon had him on the telephone again. Or they'd say, he's the world's biggest name drop. And Nixon doesn't talk to him, but every time you hear him say something, he says, I just had this conversation with the president. And I have a very clear impression that the Baker-Dunn people resent Brock primarily because of that tie. And they also are aware that there was something close to a Tennessee mafia operating at the higher levels of the Republican Party in Washington. Gavin Phillips did a piece in the New York Times about it a while back. He mentioned Pat Wilson and a fellow that helped Brock in his campaign down here, taking on some...
Ritz,
Phil Timmons?
Yeah, Ritz and Timmons too. Ken Ritz and
is Timmons considered a Brock man?
Yeah.
Was that Brock's link to the White House?
I don't really know. I've never known what his link was, and really only picked it up through osmosis that there was a link, you know. You get from the White House tapes, you get a clear impression that Baker, that they never trusted or liked Baker. I mean, you don't pick any stuff from Brock, up from Brock. You do get Timmons' name in there occasionally. But they really didn't like Baker. They didn't like anything about him. Couldn't go to him directly. They kept saying, well, get Kleindienst to call him. Kleindienst has that relationship. What does Kleindienst say that Baker thinks now? Really more interesting to speculate about what's going to happen to the Republican Party than what's going to happen to the Democratic Party. I have an idea that nothing is going to happen to the Democratic Party in the absence of some leader with some charisma, you know, to pull the party structure together. As I say, Blanton could do that. I don't anticipate that he will.
If not Blanton, then Fulton, perhaps?
Then Fulton, perhaps.
What would happen if Annabelle Clement was running for statewide office?
I tried to get her to run for the governorship this year. Bobby Clement might do it, too. I don't know if you're familiar. When he ran for Public Service Commission, he broke through for the first time in my memory in the traditional first and second district. He lost the first three districts by a total of 50,000 votes, which is unheard of. You know, usually we lose the first district by 50,000 votes. He lost those three by 50,000.
How about Frank Jr.?
Bright as hell. It sounds like a chip off the old, looks like a chip off the old block. Sounds like an echo of his father.
What does he do?
Nothing. He was hired to come manage his campaign. I don't know what the hell he does. He told me he was going through the throes of a divorce, and I guess both those kids are. Both those boys have got problems with their wives, and both of them, I think, are getting divorces. But I don't know what he does. He was some representative of a pharmaceutical house in Memphis, I think. Maybe he's going to work for Franklin Haney Company. I just don't know, but he was, I heard him make a couple of speeches during his campaign, and he's there, he's got it. I think Annabelle would have been the nominee of the party, and could have put it together.
You don't share the view you've heard from a number of people, several people anyway, that Tennessee just isn't ready to elect a woman to anything?
I don't think any woman did anything, but I think she would have been maybe the one exception. I had lunch with her 6 months ago and asked her to do it. She said, well, you can go to the well once too often. She said her husband was running for the quarter field. Bob had just run. I think her father was thinking about running for the state senate. She didn't tell me at that time. She was thinking about running for the legislature.
Maybe that got her to thinking.
I think Jane Hardaway's got a hell of a chance to win statewide office this time against Indiana. I had a strange conversation with him about disclosure. We went to lunch, and he said, you know, I'll pay for endorsement. And I said, well, if we think about getting into that race, I'd be glad they'd come by and talk to the editorial board. And he said, well, I've talked to the Banner's editorial board, and they're upset because I'm not going to disclose. And I said, well, I'm upset about that, too. Why not? Well, he said, there's not really that much money involved in this race. He said, I haven't collected that much. I don't know that, he said, I've got some problem about the canons of judicial ethics. He said, I'm a quasi-judicial officer, and the canons of ethics, judges, prohibit them from disclosing. And I said, well, I was very negative about his attitude. Finally, he said, well, you know, I've only had one large contribution. My brother-in-law from the Philippines came over and gave me a large cash contribution. That's about the only thing I have to report. Anyway, and I said, doesn't sound to me like you're going to disclose it. And he didn't. And I think that'll hurt him. She will. She'll disclose. True. She's tough as nails. Really. Made some mistakes. She talked too much of that. She made a going away speech to the members of her apartment, the employees of her apartment. Really went overboard. Had to get her take some off the back. The legislature got very upset about it. She made some claims that he tried to get him raises, and the legislature blocked it. Facts were over. So she had to take that back.
How do you assess Dunn as governor?
Fair. Very fair.
Major weakness being lack of political skills?
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Combined with staff that also lacks political skills?
Yeah.
Is that the major drawback of his staff, that they lack political skills, as opposed to lack of ability?
I think that early he made some staff mistakes. They were pretty brutal about firing people they thought were disloyal. I mean, people down. It should have been a civil service thing. And I think that the people he had around him were not just lacking in political skills. They really assumed that there was more power. More power there than there was. I think they threw their way around. So beyond that, though, I think that his attitude about business involvement in government affairs is really naive. Example, to get into conversations with him, he's not just a free enterprise capitalist. I think his idea about the purity of business and businessmen is dangerous. It hasn't reared its ugly head. That attitude hasn't caused too much of a problem for him with a couple of exceptions. I think he let the business community hire Choate, for example. And he approved originally a plan to let Choate's income be supplemented by the business community.
Who is Choate?
He's the Commissioner of Industrial Relations. Bullshit artist as far as I'm concerned. He's the PhD from, I think, Arkansas.
He's in effect development director for the state.
That's right, economic development. But he was hired by, Bronson Ingram, Pat Wilson, Victor Johnson. He wanted, I think, $50,000, $60,000 or something, and there was an agreement worked out to have business supplement his income. And we raised hell about it. Some of the legislators objected to it. They came off of that. I later heard that his wife had been given a job somewhere, and that was part of the total deal. The business community remained for that. I don't know. Never were able to prove that. But in his conversations, he's very naive, I think, about the relationship between government and business. I think he thinks that he'd give the benefit of the doubt without thinking to a president of a company, and would doubt without thinking the word of a president of a union.